House Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today, Friday, February 17th, 2012, the time is 8:09. And you think the roads are slippery the way people are coming in this morning. Present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Representative Alan Dick, and others are on the way. We do have a quorum. Our first order of business today is a presentation by Superintendent Pete Lewis of Fairbanks, North Star Borough School District. Superintendent Lewis, you're the pioneer, sir, with this Skype by technology. My committee aide, Annette Kreitzel, will move us through your PowerPoint presentation when you're ready. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony, and let's see if we can hear each other first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Delighted to have the opportunity to speak with you this morning.
Loud and clear. Go ahead with your presentation, sir.
Thank you very much. Go to the first slide, which is hopeful. And I'll be letting you know each time we wish to switch to the next slide.
Okay.
You can see we are a school district with 35 schools. We cooperate with traditional elementary, middle, and high schools, as well as charter schools. Program. Also, we serve students that are in the Fairbanks Youth Facility. Next slide, please. Our home is just over 14,000 students and has remained relatively flat for the last several years. We do anticipate about 50 students' growth next year. All of that is incumbent upon what happens at Eielson Air Force Base with regard to the fighter squadron. Next slide, please. As you look at the ethnicity breakdown of our school district, we are overwhelmingly white, but we are diverse in terms of the number of makeup of our school district. I would like to point out the multi-ethnic category. That is the fastest growing category in our school district, and it does contain a number of Alaska Native students in that number. That is something I think we need to keep track of as we look at grants and other programs that we provide to our students. We need to make sure that we can track our students that way. There were recent changes in the federal government in terms of how these how students are tracked, and so we do want to keep an eye on that. Next slide, please. Just a couple of quick facts about our school district. We have students that speak 44 different languages in our district. There on the right-hand side of the slide for you. Approximately 365 homeless students. About a third of our students are on free and reduced lunch, and we are serving 14 different handicapping conditions in special ed. Next slide, please. From a transportation standpoint, we have approximately 145 buses. We're driving over 1 million miles a year, transporting 7,000 students, and we have those two different bus barns. As you know, we're a school district about the size of the state of New Jersey, and so it's somewhat spread out. Transportation is an item that, as you know, that we are having to supplement transportation out of the operating fund, this is something that we are keeping an eye on and tracking with regard to how we get our students to and from school. We also need to provide warm storage here in Fairbanks for our buses and have some special needs with regard to insulation and other things because of the extreme temperatures that we face. And so there are some additional costs there because of that. Next slide, please. Switching to some of our results in terms of performance measures. When you look at our graduation rate from 2007 to 2011, we've made significant gains, up to 71% in terms of our overall graduation rate. But our five-year cohort is up to 75.5, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later when we get into our graduating seniors from last year and what they look like. I do want to point out that's a 17 percentage point gain, and if you look at the five-year rate, we're over 21%. Next slide, please. Our dropout rate has gone from 7.3% to 3.9%, as you can see. I think a key point to for the committee is to let you know that if you are under 16 years of age, only 6/10 of a percent of our students are dropping out. That's still too many, but that number is pretty powerful. Another key point I'd like to mention is that we have cut our dropout rate for Alaska Native students in half in this same time frame. So there is good work going on with regard to keeping kids in school, and we're excited about that. We're also excited about the potential to have students by statute stay in school until they're 18, and I think our data is overwhelming in terms of wanting to have that as a support measure. Next slide, please. In Fairbanks, we have a saying about every student has a story. Those stories are really what we need to be all about. We want our kids to have a comprehensive experience and a rich, full academic program, as well as being exposed to the arts and to activities. The next several slides are a series of articles that were in the newspaper, just to let people know with regard to the kinds of work that is going on here in our district, and to know that each individual student does have a story, and it's our job to know that story and to connect with them. This first story is about a student senior project at Hutchison High School with his unmanned aerial vehicle. He set up his own website, and you could actually watch his flights live. It was very impressive in terms of his work, and we think it's pretty powerful when a student's using their permanent fund check to support their senior project. That says something about their love for learning and how they're connected to school. Next slide, please. The BEST program is our correspondence homeschool program. We try to provide a variety of different opportunities to meet students' needs, and BEST is one of those options, and it's meeting the needs of some of our students, and that's part of the challenge in terms of trying to meet the needs of 14,000 students and understanding that each of those students has that individual story. Next slide, please. These two stories deal with some of our CTE programs and how our students are performing. We sent our students from the automotive program at North Pole High School to meet with folks in Michigan in terms of the national competition, as well as the Lathrop robotics team as part of our engineering academy at Lathrop High School. Next slide, please. You can see that our students are performing extremely well. We sent the West Valley Academic Decathlon team to the Nationals, and we also sent a student to the Poetry Out Loud National Competition. These are just a few of many of our students that are performing extremely well. But some are individuals, some are a part of a team, but the importance is to provide a variety of experiences for our students. Next slide, please. I think I don't want to read the slide to you, but our students are performing obviously very well in terms of state and national standardized assessments, and that we're ahead of the curve there. Next slide, please. As we look at academic performance and the SBAs, we obviously met the targets, and I think you've probably seen a number of slides with regard to academic performance from the number of districts that are presented to you. Many of our schools have met the proficiency targets for language arts and math, and I think you can see the numbers there. The bottom line is we are all going to be in AYP jail here very soon. As you know, 100% of our students need to meet the standard by 2014. Next slide, please. This is a graphic of the targets that our district needs to meet. There's 1,085 targets. We made it in all of them but 142, which means we met 87% of these targets. Next year, the number of targets will grow at our high schools to over 40 targets that we will need to meet. And as you know, if we miss in one of those, we are not going to be meeting the standard, and the AMO will continue to climb. and we anticipate that there will be more schools that will not make AYP. I think we need to keep in mind this is just one measure, and that we need to be measuring kids in a variety of different ways. We need multiple measures. This is just a snapshot, SBAs, in terms of how our kids are performing. Educating kids is really like a full-length movie, though, and we need to make sure that we are looking at that whole movie and making sure that we have multiple measures to see how our students are performing and stacking up. We don't need to be frightened by AYP. We need to use the data and the measure to help us to get better, but we don't need to let that be the end-all or consume us in terms of what we have to do. Our job is to prepare our kids so that they have the skills and that they can read, write, think, understand, and communicate effectively so that when they leave us, they have options. Next slide, please. Let's take a look at the graduates from Fairbanks. Next slide, please. When you look at last year's graduating class, 80% of our seniors gave us an A or B. There were 868 graduates. We had 46 dropouts. 50% enrolled in college immediately. And our data indicates that 70% of our kids will enroll in college within the first 2 years. So obviously, we haven't gotten to that two-year mark yet, but the data from our previous classes indicates that we'll be approaching that 70% number very soon. I would also like to point out that we have 92 students that are past the graduation year in terms of their cohort. Perhaps you could describe them as red shirts, or that they are taking an extra year of time to get there. But 92 students are back with us to continue on. I think that's a testament to what we are doing in our schools, and that those kids would come back and stay with us because they see the value of receiving a high school diploma. They see the value of being in school. They see the value of the skill set that they are receiving from our school district. Next slide, please. Let's take a look at some student achievement data. Next slide. Our SAT scores, you can see Fairbanks on the left there. We're outperforming the state of Alaska and the nation in terms of SAT scores. Next slide, please. Same is true with regard to ACT scores, and you can see the composite scores, science, reading, math, and English scores. Again, Fairbanks on the left, state of Alaska in the middle, and the nation on the right. Next slide, please. You look at advanced placement courses. We have 63% of our students are receiving a 3 or higher on their tests. The national average is 58%. Next slide, please. As we look at these programs and we look at how our students are performing in a variety of different measures, we are getting positive results. Career and technical education money that came to our district last year, it was extremely beneficial. You can see from the survey data that we've done here in terms of our graduating seniors, about half took a CTE course, but 85% of those kids said that helped to influence their educational goals. Next slide, please. We have entered into school apprenticeship agreements with the following four labor groups, and we're excited about growing those opportunities for our students. I'd also like to point out something that's not on a slide here, but we also have an apprenticeship program at Eielson Air Force Base. And it's the first in the nation where we're actually putting students out on the base, which is basically a small city, and providing internship opportunities for them 2 hours a day for juniors and seniors. And as many, we have the ability to do that in as many as 40 different career fields. We've got up to 15 students involved in that program currently, and it's in its second year. But we're extremely proud of that program, and we're proud of the career and technical opportunities that we can afford our students. And we are growing those programs, and we certainly appreciate the legislative support that career and technical education has been given. Next slide, please. In terms of the Alaska Performance Scholarship, you can see the numbers of students that have received Level 1 honors, Level 2, and Level 3. As Work Keys comes up online, I think you'll see additional students that will be able to receive the Alaska Performance Scholarship. in the lower part of the of the graphic there. Last year, WorkKeys was just getting started, and I'm more excited about the number of students that we think we'll be able to have received this wonderful financial aid opportunity to be able to attend a college in Alaska. Next slide. To help prepare our kids and our parents and give people a tracking tool, we have created through our student data system, PowerSchool. You can notice the button that's on the far right-hand side, the second one down, about the Alaska Performance Scholarship, so that you can track where you are in terms of your requirements, and it gives you a wonderful real-time opportunity to see exactly where you are, what you qualify for. I mean, this has been a very beneficial tool for us, and it's part of the innovative work that our technology folks are doing to provide information to students and families so that they can get to the performance scholarship. 34% of our students qualified for the scholarship. That's again above the state average of 29%. So we're excited about that. We know that this number will grow, and we're looking forward to that in the future. Next slide, please. Talk a little bit about innovation. We could go on and on here with probably 10 or 12 slides of material about what our teachers are doing and the wonderful work that they do each and every day with our students. So we would like to talk a little bit about technology and some of the work that we've done there, because it does have implications that might be able to help the rest of the state. We have developed an app track program that allows us to track the apps that go on individual devices, both iTouches and iPads, and we can do all of that electronically from a centralized system, and we've been able to get apps delivered to our devices without having to go directly through our purchasing department. If you know, being a part of a state agency and how that works for us to be able to pull that off, meet audit standards, and deliver applications as quickly as we can is really quite a feat with the normal bureaucracy that we face in terms of trying to have a system that meets all of the standards. Those applications, we have a number of iDevices in our buildings that students are using, and there are thousands and thousands of applications that are out there. We're required to track those by and have a license for each of those devices. So being able to do that electronically saves significant time and money. The other exciting piece that I wanted to speak about this morning was mobile device management. We have created a system to allow us to centrally control the settings on these devices, and this is where I think it could pay huge dividends in terms of the rest of the state. Being able to control from Fairbanks, if we need to adjust the settings on the iPads at Eielson Air Force Base or at Two Rivers or at Salcha, we can do that. We can push out web clips to that so that we can send video, we can send specific documents. They'll show up with an icon that looks just like an app, but there's specific curriculum then that we can push out to devices. We have the ability to do that within to push that out to the devices within the building. We're excited about this tool, and that it will, we think, make a huge difference in terms of time, because as we share resources between a first grade classroom and a sixth grade classroom, or in a K-12 school between a first grade classroom or a 12th grade classroom, those settings need to be what's available to students about whether the camera's on, whether YouTube is active, whether they can see movies or not, those kinds of things. We can adjust that without having to touch every machine. And so we're excited about being able to do that, and we think that the innovative work that our technology folks are doing that we're highlighting this morning is just one of the many aspects of our school district that is doing incredible work. I think from the information that you've seen this morning, clearly we are getting results. Our students, our teachers, all of our staff need your support in continuing this work. As you know, we face significant budget challenges right now, and we are we're working through those. But I just want to emphasize, you know, how hard our teachers are working, and the kinds of results that we're seeing from our students, and how well they are being prepared for the future. Can we get better? Absolutely. Will we get better? We will. But we do need your continued support for that to happen. Next slide, please. Happy to answer any questions that you might have. Okay. And I think I made it within the time limit.
You were close. Keith, thank you. You know, the thing that impressed, obviously you're doing quite well, but the thing that impressed me the most is the fact that there's evidence here that you actually polled your students and that you gave them the opportunity to give you a score. And I see in terms of the career and technical, you also poll them as to whether they, you know, whether what you were doing was really helping them. And I think that's maybe the most important feedback we as educators could ever get, just the customer satisfaction element. And we don't always get that. So I'm very impressed with that. Any questions from committee? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was interested that you are using project-based or theme-based education in quite a bit in the career and technical, and some of the sounds like you have a senior project requirement. That sounds great. I just wanted to point out that, you know, the question has been a while on funding and are we seeing improvement, and I can definitely see from your graduation rates and your dropout rates and all of those things that you are making good strides, and so I just want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions from committee?
I have a question.
Representative Wilson.
With the current year that you're looking at, as far as your budgeting goes, how are you faring?
In the current year, or where are we facing next year?
Yeah.
Next year, we are anticipating a maintenance level budget deficit of $12.3 million. So we will have significant challenges. We have released a series of budget cuts, and we did budget forums this fall to let folks know that there was we were looking at these challenges. And so we are continuing to advocate with both sides of the both the House and the Senate, and with the governor in terms of trying to seek funding that will help to backfill some of that.
Follow up. Had you used any of the ERA money for more than just one time monies? It doesn't count if money was used to hold off something that you would have had to delete before. How did you use the ERA money?
We were very careful not to have any ongoing expenses with regard to the ERA money. We used that for technology purchases and for one-time support. We did use it to a couple of additional years of time for our graduation success coaches. When that funding went away, we did eliminate that program. But we do not have any ongoing costs associated with those federal dollars.
Last thing. Then, are you trying to put those coaches back in the next budget?
They were cut last year, or the previous year. We are not currently doing that, because we're looking at with the $12.2 million challenge that we have, we're looking at about 95 positions that we'll be making adjustments with. Approximately 60 of those are from the classroom, and we're hoping that we'll be able to get some resources to bring people back and make sure that those positions are filled and that class sizes are maintained.
Last one.
Follow up.
If you got funding, would you rather have it in the foundation formula or out of it?
I, w- I would prefer it to be in the foundation formula that provides for ongoing funding that we will be able to plan ahead for. I think that it is important in terms of communicating with our constituents, and that we don't get into this yo-yo process of we have to cut because we don't know if we're receiving one-time money or not, and then we add back when funds come, and then the next year we're right back in that same cycle. And from a planning purpose, we certainly would prefer to have that in the base student allocation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your slide 25, which was the one that had the Alaska Performance Scholarship, that Power School, I guess that is. So is that a tracking system that you have, and is that available to the parents or the student, or generally you have to have a password, or how is that set up?
It is available to both parents and students, and it is password protected, so that you can go in and look at your academic performance. You can look at your how you're tracking with regard to the performance scholarship. You can see your attendance and grades, and you can it's a tool for parents to be able to go in and look and see how their students are doing.
Okay, Superintendent Lewis, thank you. It's very impressive. Obviously, you're one of the visionary leaders in the state, and hopefully we'll be turning to you if we have any further questions, and even in statewide issues. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very, very much for this opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. We'll next take up HB 313, student count estimates. Representative Feige, do you want to join your staff at the witness table?
Yeah, really.
Back to order. Representative Feige, the microphone's yours, sir.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Eric Feige representing District 12. Before I get into the sponsor statement, just let me let you guys know where this bill came from. Didn't come from school board, didn't come from a union, didn't come from me either. It came out of a conversation I had with a couple of my school superintendents, and just sitting down and saying, you know, what kind of things could we do in the statutes that would essentially make your financial life easier? And Duncan Ware from Delta Greeley School District said, you know, if we knew ahead of time, if we knew before we started our budgeting process, what we could expect for funding, it would take a lot of the uncertainty out of the whole budgeting process. And batted that one around a bit, and House Bill 313 is what we came up with. So let me go ahead with the sponsor statement, and then I'll pass it over to Mike Pascal here for the rest of the presentation. Our school districts need effective tools to plan and budget education. Budget for the education of our children. Under House Bill 313, subject to the hold harmless provisions, changes in the base student allocation or other legislative changes, districts will be able to complete the budget process and determine staffing levels earlier, eliminate unnecessary layoff notices, and execute employment contracts to improve the stability of the education climate in the state. The purpose of the bill is to base the funding for each school district in the state on the count under AS 1417-600 for the preceding fiscal year. For example, the count conducted in October 2012 will establish the funding level for the district for the 2014 fiscal year. The new funding formula will not change the hold harmless clause currently in existence. If a decrease in enrollment of 5% or more occurs, the district will continue to receive funding based upon the average daily membership plus the 75-50 25% addition over the following 3 years. other provisions of the foundation formula will remain as well. If a district has an actual increase in student count of greater than 5%, this legislation will require the Department of Education to provide supplemental funding to the district for the current fiscal year equal to the average daily membership for the current year. For example, if the October 2013 count is 5% larger than the October 2012 count, the department will provide supplemental funding to the district for fiscal year 2014 equal to the increase in the average daily membership between the October 2012 count and the October 2013 count. The new funding method will implement with the fiscal 2014 year. Thus, the count conducted in the fall of 2012 will provide the funding level for both the fiscal year 2013 and 2014, subject to the hold harmless provisions. An important consideration in this legislation is, except for fiscal year 2014, the actual funding given a district will not change, only the timing of the funding. And at this point, I'll turn it over to Mike Pasco, my aide, and he'll continue with the rest of the PowerPoint.
Thank you. Thank you. For the record, Michael. For the record, Michael Pasco, and Office of Representative Eric Feige. In what happens, and what I'm going to try hopefully to avoid today, is the issue of, as we get into this, fiscal 13, fiscal 14, fiscal 12, when we're counting, and try to look at this more conceptually and just look at some base numbers. But before we get into that very far, this did come out of the district saying, and as I've sat through numerous school board meetings as a visitor to those meetings over the years, one of the biggest things that I heard was during this time of the year when they began the budgeting process, well, subject to what our income actually turns out to be. So, and from a business perspective, in a business, obviously your income is generated as you go. But for a school where we're trying to educate children, saying to the school, well, sometime next year we'll really tell you how much money you have for that year, is to me nothing other than a stupid way to go about it. They need to know going into the year how much money they have. That's been the argument for forward funding over the years, is let's tell the district now how much money, what's their BSA going to be next year, so they don't have to wait until June or July to find out. Well, that's one of the problems with student counts, is you can't count the students until they're there. So what we tried to come up with was a system that basically said, if we take a count and say, here it is, this is how much funding you have, then if you have an anomaly and you have a very large or small change, then there'll be adjustments over that year or future years to account for it. Just like we do now, if they have a drop of greater than 5%, that provision would remain so the district doesn't come up losing a lot of money in a single year. So they don't have to close a building or whatever just because they lost over 5% of their students. So this is what I'm trying to do. So the bill's out there. I want to have Duncan Ware, who is the superintendent at Delta Greeley, give a little more conceptual of what they go through in their budgeting process and where the concerns are, and then we'll look at some actual numbers that we use to see the impacts on the funding. So Duncan Ware should be available to testify on the phone.
And I think I've been negligent. We have certainly have Representative Sisson Wilson and Kawasaki have joined us, and for quite a while. So I missed that one. Mike, you want to turn that over to Superintendent Ware?
Yes.
Okay. Superintendent Ware, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you would identify yourself for the record and help us understand this.
For the record, Duncan Ware, Superintendent, Delta Greeley School District. Good morning, Chairman Dick, members of the Health Education Committee. Essentially, in conversations, and this grew out of our school board, looking at a process of how do we eliminate some of the questions surrounding funding for the following school year in order to add some stability to the decisions that we make in the spring of each year. Essentially, we narrowed it down to there are three basic questions in the budgeting process. How many students do we expect in our next school year? How much will we receive per student? And then we wait until the following October for the student count dates to find out how many students actually show up. And so looking at those three primary questions, we decided to address wanting to find a way to simplify our funding process without actually attaching dollars, but looking at alternatives to the process other than just asking for additional funds. And the one question that we found that would be easily addressed by taking the count in the current fiscal year or school year and applying it to the next school year and fiscal year is to have a solidification of the number of students that we can base our budget on. Then if there are adjustments to the BSA and other monies that come in funding for the schools, that's an easy adjustment. But at least we have at least confidence at the 100% level that we will have this number of students to project our funding for the next school year. What this does, currently, we have, if there's a change in the count from what we estimate our count will be for the next school year, those adjustments are made in the current fiscal year, during the current school year. So if those changes are significant, there's a direct impact immediately within the school year, as opposed to having an opportunity with the count presented, process presented in House Bill 313, instead of having the opportunity to plan forward into the next school year based on those numbers, we are actually able to do what I think a lot of people would like school districts to do, plan better, plan more strategically, and get the most bang for our buck. If we have an opportunity to do all of those and instead of adjusting within the school year, that's preferable. Additionally, particularly in small districts where teachers and staff become an integral part of the community, often develop significant ties to the community in a short period of time, with our current statutes requiring tenured teachers to receive contracts by March 15, our non-tenured contract teachers do not have to be notified of retention until the last day of the school year. In the current budgetary process and with some of the delays with knowing what the BSA and the funding will be for the next school year, those non-tenured teachers who, as I said before, typically have made some strong ties and connectedness to the community, are put on notice from basically March 15th until the end of the school year. We think we can keep you, but the reality is I'm not going to discourage you from taking the opportunity to look for other positions. What that results in is that we begin to lose an opportunity to keep some highly qualified teachers in insignificant positions within our schools that directly impact the achievement of our students. If work environment stability, when you have a portion of your working staff who is unsure of their future within the district, that creates some conflict and upheaval within the system and also within the community. Their connectedness with the community, there's a direct impact to their unknowing their status until the final parts of the school year that ripple throughout the community. Thank you.
Okay, any questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little confused. Are you saying that if you knew that you were going to be funded for the same number of students in the next year, that your budgetary problems don't require knowing what the BSA is, and that you wouldn't have to lay off people if you didn't have knowing whether there was going to be any increase or decrease in the BSA, or is your budget more constrained by knowing how much per student there's going to be than having a fixed number of students in the following year?
All of those are interconnected. We believe our district has traditionally taken a very conservative approach to funding. For example, in the current funding year, recognizing that there was not going to be an increase in the BSA early on, we were able to plan ahead for that, and still the question exists, how many students is our funding going to be based on? Not saying that BSA is not important, but if we have currently we have two questions that are continuous question marks until October of the next year to a degree. One of those questions is, we look at trends with enrollment, we canvass the community, we look at, we hold pre-K, pre-kindergarten, early registration to have an idea of the number of new students coming into our school. But if we knew that student number, that at least eliminates that question. BSA, on the other hand, now, for example, in this current bus area cycle, we're looking at the BSA remaining the same. So if we knew the number of students times the current BSA, we could move forward with our funding. Not to say that there's not a significant impact to flat funding, but at least being able to eliminate one of the questions that exist in that process makes us a little more sure that we're on the right path.
Follow-up?
Thank you. So within this bill, as I understand it, the count would be not increased for that following year. In other words, you would not get the BSA for that year. Let's say you were like the Kenai Peninsula and had about 9,000 students, and that would mean that if you had a 4% increase or 360 kids, you wouldn't get any funding for those 360 kids. Could you absorb those kind of increases without any funding for those 360 kids in a district of 9,000?
I think it's certainly possible. As we've looked at and kind of worked through numbers for our district, what the impact would be, it's a matter of scale. But in our district, 5% would be approximately 50 students. But if we arrive at 40%, recognizing that those students are not going to come and all be in third grade. So they would be, there would be some distribution across the spectrum of grades, kindergarten to 12. And so that not being a significant number to add to classrooms, I don't foresee that it would be an issue of necessarily having to add teachers of those types of things.
Excuse me, Representative Feige, is your question, your comment in regards to this or another issue? Okay, Representative Cisna, then Representative Feige.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And yes, Superintendent, I guess my question is, and I guess it could even, it could be positive or negative, but, and that is one of the things that's really affecting all of Alaska, but more than any of the places that actually have access to a road system. You guys are on a road system. But do you see this, how do you see this in terms of the costs of fuel and the accessibility of fuel? And there's parts of our state that you don't know until sometimes right about the time school starts whether or not you're actually going to have fuel for the winter. And you don't, and that is going to actually affect in many cases how many people stay in the community. How many kids, and especially the children, oftentimes are going to be sent to other places by their parents. How do you see that playing out with this scenario?
I think one of the significant things, as I view it, and certainly there could be other opinions for those who work in the Bush districts, but I do know that they have an issue where they have schools that barely meet the minimum number of students enrolled to actually maintain a school. With this process, I believe this would buy an opportunity for school districts to have a year of planning when they are considering closing the school, because I know that it's a major impact not only to the students but to the community as a whole when districts are faced with closing a school. Right now, sometimes those decisions are made within the current school year, which I know can be very disruptive. And I believe with the count going they would have an opportunity to do that, because what they're actually a year out. Anything that's happening and affecting with this count, we're actually providing, with the early count and the establishment of the count carrying into the next fiscal year, some stability, because we're actually buying an additional month of planning going into the next school year. So I think it could be beneficial.
Thank you, Representative Feige, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ware, I guess this should be a warning to you. Every once in a while when you have a chat with your representative, sometimes they run with your idea. maybe you got in deeper than you thought you would. My question is, do you spend every penny that you receive in terms of public aid every year? Assuming there's no major emergencies, do you typically have a surplus of some kind?
We do, depending on, the events that occur during the year. Obviously, as part of the budgetary process, there are things that you look at, like energy costs and maintenance costs and those things, where those budgets are not exact, so you build into that budget, some expectations that there could be an increase or a major problem of some sort. So oftentimes at the end of our year, we will find that there are additional funds, and we're currently, our reserve balance is sitting at about 7.8%.
And do you have is there a limit as to how much of the funds you can retain over, kind of roll over to the next year?
As long as the cumulative is under 10%.
Okay, and is that, I guess since you're not within a municipality, you're basically allowed to keep up to 10%?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, there's been a little bit of a change on how you count students, and on page 8, subsection D, part-time students have been included in the count data. I don't know, because it says according to regulations adopted by the department, but the next one, E, says when reporting a district ADM, a part-time student who is a correspondence student may not be counted as more than one full-time equivalent student. So what is your take on that? Do you have correspondence students, and what kind of a change would that make?
Yes, we do have correspondence students as well as a statewide cyber school program. Currently count at 80% of the BSA as long as they're enrolled for 4 credits or more. I don't see that it would have a major impact with that change.
Follow up. Okay, so you're looking at it that can't change, and you're not looking at it as if that would mean that you could count each of those students at 100%.
No, we would not.
Okay. I have a question, and obviously people thought about this. I just need to know where the logic came from when we talked about increase or decrease of 5%. I was wondering where the 5% came from. Why not 3%? Why not 8%? Mike Pascal, you want to answer that?
Mike Pascal, for the record. We had to pick a number, and we picked the same number for the increase as currently used for the decrease. The current hold harmless clause is at 5%, and so we used the same number. Certainly, as we continue to research numbers and hear more and more from districts, there may be a need to change that number, but that's where the number came from.
Okay, thank you. And would you want to explain for us, so we all have a better understanding of the whole harmless clause?
Certainly. Again, Mike Pascal for the record. And this has been an interesting process for me, because I felt like I had a fairly decent handle on school funding in the state. And it seems like every day I learn something new that's a little bit different in one little part of it. So the current, you're speaking of the current hold harmless clause?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The one you're referencing here.
Okay. The current hold harmless clause provides that if a school district loses 5% of their students based upon the adjusted student count for the schools. Okay. And there is someone here from the department that could probably answer that part of it even better than I can. But basically, instead of losing all of the money for the students, in the first year following the loss, they only lose 25% of the money, so they get to keep 75%. So let's use round numbers. 10 students, you only lose the funding for 75% or 7.5% of those students. And then the following year, you only lose half the money, so you would get funded for 5 of those 10 students. And then the following year, you get funded for 25% or 2.5% of those students. And then after the fourth year, then you've lost all the funding. So it's just a gradual decline if there's a large drop in the number of students.
I understand that. Also, we do have people from the department here to answer any questions, and I understand Representative Feige's work, you've worked very closely with the department on this, so I don't expect any difference of perception here, but Mike, if you would want to answer, or maybe we get somebody at the department to answer. I'm looking here where it says that the department will provide supplemental funding. I was wondering where the pot of gold is there.
Mr. Chair, there isn't a pot of gold. I'll have to defer that one to legal, in that is the language that they chose to use, and whether that falls in line with the existing choice of funding for the, whether it's the department or the state, but that was the language that legal wrote into the document. But essentially, we would be looking at the supplemental budget that funding would be part of the supplemental budget. But currently, if you remember today, the funding for schools is not done in advance, so it's already being done that way. It doesn't change. Timing-wise, it's still the same because it's done later.
Okay, I thought there might be a pot of gold out there. Any other question from committee? I know we have people from the department here. Yep. To answer questions, do you have any further comments?
Yeah, please, Mike. I've got some more presentation before we move on. Okay. Did everybody get to answer? Ask Superintendent Ware, were we able to? Everybody good? Okay.
Got it.
All right. I wanted to let Superintendent Ware present from the school district's perspective what they're dealing with, because I think it gives a better understanding. And as we've researched and worked on this, we've tried very hard in our office and conversations with the department and with the districts to try and account for every possible scenario, and we still don't have all of them. How do we make this work in a way that benefits all the school districts in our state and the education system in our state? Because one of the benefits that I see to the education system is currently when we're putting teachers, giving them pink slips and saying, yeah, we'll try to hire you back, or we'll hire you back. Well, how many times do you stay in a state that's doing that? Or maybe that's just all the push they need to head back to Illinois or Indiana or Iowa or Wisconsin or wherever. We've been thinking about going back, and I don't have a job next year, and maybe I can find a job back there, so I'll head back. So I believe we lose teachers because of that particular method, and so that's one of the stability factors that would add to this. Is with this funding method, they would know how many teachers they could afford next year. I do want to look at
one second, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just sort of as an aside to that, I would ask members to think about perhaps changes in your own staff and what that does to the functioning of your own offices if you have a significant turnover. Obviously, we're not dealing with that many people, but you can imagine the turnover in your office multiplied by the total employed population of a school district. It is a significant gyration if you have to deal with turnover in your teachers.
Good, relevant example. Thank you, Representative Feige.
To the wording in the bill in particular, it's important to understand that the first 7 pages of the bill is just conforming language.
that I tried to get removed, but they believe that there could be a bond still out there that is applicable to the statute, so they felt like they had to leave them in. So turning to page 8 in the bill, beginning at line 4, okay, we address the changes that we're trying to do, and that is the hold harmless that we're inserting. So if we'll jump real quick down to line 21, we'll see the meat of the change we're trying to make is that the determination for state aid is for the succeeding fiscal year following the count period. So again, if we did the count that was done this fall, it's for our funding next year. That's what we're looking at. And then again, the hold harmless clause was 5%. So if it increases 5%, then there's supplemental funding equal to the increase in the adjusted ADM for the current fiscal year. Again, as a way to account for the issue of if a district ends up with more students than they planned for and they need to hire additional staff. And again, it depends on how many. If you add 5% in Delta, which is 50 or 60 students, whatever the numbers work out to, if they're all in one grade, you probably have to have another teacher. But if it's four of them or five of them in each grade, you may or may not be hiring more staff. Depends on the breakdown. And again, you can't predict that, but at least with what we're proposing here, you know how much money you have to work with instead of waiting until the count in October and then the adjustments to the count in December or January rolling around and actually having the number. And then last, the changes beginning at line 28 is just adjusting the count as the based upon the existing existing statutes. Part D is not letting students get counted twice is essentially what they were looking at there in terms of part-time students. The current provisions that the department has for part-time students, and then in C or E, the part-time students and correspondence students, not allowing them to be counted multiple times in the process. Okay. Looking a little bit at the state as a whole, I think it's important to look at the fact of the slide that I have up, and that's the enrollment for the state. Fortunate part of looking at this right now is the state's historically the enrollment of the state over the last 10 years has been fairly flat. So we're funding based upon analyzing this kind of based upon what's happening at a state level, and at the state level the student counts have not gone up or down much in any given year or over the last several years. Certainly some districts have declines, some districts have increases, but across the state it's not moving a lot one way or the other. So we have a fairly stable student enrollment, which I don't know if it makes it easier in the process, but I think it's a good perspective to look at. What we did, and I've done this with lots of numbers, so in I think over the next hopefully another hearing on this bill we'll be looking at some more numbers, but I felt like this was a good starting point number wise is to look at a small district. And again, the numbers are hypothetical, and what you see on the first set of data on this screen is this particular district, which is very much in the small end of the scale of districts, but we have districts with under 100 students. And if you look at, based upon the current BSA, the different quantity of students ranging, in this case, starting at 64, then going to 67, 68, 70, 73, 73, and 75 students, obviously the trend is an upward trend. Okay. You can see for each of the fiscal years, their funding. So in fiscal year 13, under the current formula with 67 students, and again, this leaves out all the multitudes of calculations that are part of the formula. This was just a number to work with. Okay. They get $380,560, and under the proposed method, they get $363,520, which is $17,000 less
for that during that funding year. Okay. But the important part is that's well under the 10% that they're allowed to withhold in their reserves. So they should have that money available. And if you look back to the previous year, it's the exact same amount of funding they got the previous year. Okay. They just received the funding based upon that number. And so as you go across, you'll notice they're always being funded based upon the current year. The previous year's number in this particular example. Okay. So for the fiscal year 12 through 17, under the old formula, they got the $2.3 million, and in fiscal year 13 through 18, under the new formula, they got the same money. Okay. So and that's a fairly simple example to look at. The alternative is if you have a decrease in enrollment and a constant decrease, and that's what we have on the second slide, same general numbers. We started at 64 and we decreased. Small percentages, again, all of these are under 5%, so we're not dealing with hold harmless or any of those items, and you'll see the decrease. And again, it started out at the 363,520 and decreased over time. Each year they're receiving their funding based upon the previous year. So for fiscal year 12 through 17, under the old formula, they received slightly over $2 million, and in the new formula, in fiscal year 13 through 18, they received the $2 million. It's very clear to look at that one of the issues here, and we're still trying to address this further, is if you look at the first diagram or the first set of numbers where you have a constant increase, the district constantly falls short just a little bit. Okay. And that is still a provision that we're talking to as many districts as we can and saying, what's the impact here? Because you're behind every year, and can you survive that? But if you look at the second numbers, they're ahead every year. So it works to their advantage. Okay. Any questions on the numbers here?
Representative Seaton.
So the current method line is that 363 not included in the first year FY12 in the calculations?
When fiscal year 12 under the current method, you would be taking the 64 students for that year at the 5680 and getting your funding for that year.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't ask my question quite right, I guess. Looking across there, if you run the total 12 through 17 on the first year, and then it's 13 through 18 on the proposed method. Okay,
right,
I understand.
Right. Okay. To make sure that we're, Representative Seaton, to the chair, we're trying to make sure that the funding is the same, it's just over a different set of years.
Right.
That's the important part. All right. Any other questions on this?
On the number, Representative Cisna.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And math isn't my strongest thing, and I have in my mind there's something here that's not right. And I think that what is not right is that somebody winds up holding the bag. You know, I mean, that always happens. You know, you never get 100% good, right? And it's a negative way to think. So far this sounds really good, but I'm just kind of wondering who's holding the bag. And I guess it would be somebody is keeping the debt a little longer, that the state actually winds up giving more a little bit longer, and that there's probably interest or something like that comes into this picture.
Representative Cisna, through the chair, I will say we did not look at things like if interest is being earned on the money that's in reserves, because we felt like the importance here was stabilizing the budget process, and unless there was a huge dollar difference somewhere that just really threw things out, we didn't find it. If you look at, for example, the fiscal note, and we'll talk about that as we get more into this process, the state, I believe, put about $1 million on the fiscal note. And as I think they will testify to, as you feel free to ask them, it depends. And that's the answer to, is there someone left holding the bag? I think it depends, and it depends on how the numbers work out. And that's what we're trying to make sure we address every possible scenario that can come up to make sure there's not a catch that we're not seeing.
Okay.
Because we have the same concern.
Representative Faye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To address Representative Assistant's question about who's left holding the bag, it also depends on the scale at which you're looking at. If you're the state, you're looking at the overall changes across the state, and you know those numbers are going to go up and down over time, and so the state's funding is going to go up and down over time. You're going to have districts that are going to go up. You're going to have other districts that are going to go down. From the state's perspective, the money that we spend, given our current formula, will essentially stay about pretty much the same. For the individual districts, now they're going to have issues, especially if they're a district with a rising population. And again, the key is how much money can the district, and different districts handle this differently. And a lot of times it's driven by, you know, if in the case of Delta Junction, which is not within a municipality, they're allowed to hold up to 10% of monies they receive from the state. If they don't spend it, they're allowed to hold it to the next year. So that gives them a buffer to absorb cash flow. In some of the larger districts that lie within municipalities, and the Mat-Su Borough was famous for this, what tends to happen with the money is if the district does a good job and it keeps everything under budget and, you know, is real mindful of their expenses, and that school district actually ends up with a surplus at the end of the year, municipalities, some of them, have a tendency to go to the school district and yank that money back out and redirect it within their municipality, which is a bit of a bait and switch or shell game or whatever you want to call it. But that's the municipalities doing it to the school district. That's not the state doing it to the school district. So that's something else we've kind of arrived at just here fairly recently, as to, you know, what exactly was happening with all that extra money. So that's something we could choose to address in an amendment to the bill, or it's something we could simply leave up to the responsibility of the municipalities to deal with their own cash flow issues.
Mike, I do have a question. I know you work quite well with the department, and my question is, have you had conversations with Carl Rose and the Superintendents Association as well? And because I'm trying to imagine what district might this help, what district might this hurt. So have you had conversations with the superintendents and school boards?
Mr. Chairman, of course, obviously last week the school board were here, and so I tried to talk to as many as I possibly could. Most of them hadn't spent much time thinking about it, so we tried to make sure there was a mutual understanding of what we're trying to do, and they were trying to do something to help districts. So if there is a problem, and there have been one or two problems identified with one or two districts, and that's where we're trying to say, how can we make, what's the fix to your problem? Because we believe that what I would consider the average district in Alaska, which would be the medium-sized districts that are located scattered throughout the state, I think this is an excellent tool for them, and I think even the smaller districts, some of the larger districts, there is some complication, and we're trying to make sure we examine that and say, how do we make sure this doesn't harm those districts? So we may see some adjustments, but until it gets here and it gets in this committee, and hopefully you'll be hearing from some of those people today and in the future, those questions will come out, and we can address them better, because we've been discussing this for several months, and there's, oh, it sounds great, oh, it sounds great. But until people start sitting down and looking at the numbers and seeing that this might actually impact them, the discussion doesn't really get real. And so I think we're approaching that stage now. But we got a lot of really good comments back, and we did get a couple of concerns, and we're still trying to address those concerns and make sure that they're valid, and that we're all agreeing that the impact that we think would happen is actually what would happen, and hopefully they're all addressable so that we'll have something that in the end those districts will agree is to their benefit as well.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we don't want any unintended consequences. We're trying to help. We're not trying to hurt anybody.
That's exactly right. Okay. Looking at some more numbers, and this is the last of the numbers for the day. So. And, you know, again, I've got this done with medium districts, large districts, larger increase. What's the outcomes? But I wanted to stick with the small districts today. What you have on your first set of numbers, the distinction here is the declining district, but in fiscal year 15, they have an 8.3% decline. And so you can see what the impact is to the district when the current hold harmless clause kicks in, both in their current funding method as well as in the proposed funding method. Okay. So that kicks in fiscal year 15 under the current method at $333,700, and in fiscal year 16. And again, I want to point out, that because it's important, I used just the base number, the base student allocation in this number. I did not go through all the cost factors that we currently have. So if you start, remember there's more complication to the formula, but I wanted to keep it one number versus one calculation so we didn't have to say, well, how big is the school and that type of thing. So that's, again, the end result, though, with this is if you look at fiscal year 12 through 17, they got a little over $2 million. And in fiscal year 13 through 18, they got the same amount of money. So the net at the end of those two periods is the same for the district, the gross that they're receiving from the state. So what we have to make sure we've got in place is the how do they on a year-to-year basis deal with, in this case, is what becomes surplus money after the first year. And that's still a big question, the first year. Remember, the first year this goes into effect, districts will be funded the same amount of money 2 years in a row. Okay. So I'm expecting that if we find that this is a good idea, we like this bill, or you like this bill and want to move this bill forward, there's a point at which we're going to have to figure out that very first year and a provision to make sure the districts don't come up short that first year, because we don't want them to, we don't want to cut their funding. Looking at the second set of numbers, again, simply a district increasing. Okay. So in fiscal year 15, they go over the 5% threshold. Okay. And again, each year, they're short, but the following year they're paid that same amount of money again. So over the 5 year period, or 6 year, excuse me, or 12 through 17 versus 13 through 18, they're receiving the same amount of funds. And just as a point here, as it's written in statute, it says an increase in the adjusted ADM for the current district is a hold harmless. And because that number doesn't become available until later in the year, I calculated this as a half of a year's funding as the increase, not a full year in the hold harmless. Okay.
Can you,
Representative Seaton?
Can you explain the half a year?
Yep. Yes.
Calculation.
Representative Seaton, through the chair. If you look at the increase in fiscal year 15, the 408,960 for the current year is based upon the current method. But if you move to the next year, fiscal year 16, see if I got my if you look at the fiscal year 15, 397,600. You'll see that's higher than the fiscal year 14 current method because of the hold harmless kicked in.
So what we did is we took the increase here from 68 to 72 and took half of that and multiplied it by the BSA, or took that number and multiplied it by half of the BSA, because the numbers don't become available until close to halfway through the year.
But, Mr. Chairman, can I follow? But you're calculating for the forthcoming year on counts that you had previously, am I not? I mean,
Representative Seaton, through the chair. And this is, again, where it always becomes tricky every time when you look at this. There are two calculations that calculate their total funding for fiscal year 15 under the proposed statute, under the proposed funding method. The first number that's calculated is the one that occurs in advance, and that's taking the fiscal year 14 attendance or BSA, or excuse me, ADM, the average daily membership, and doing all the calculations and coming up with a number that's going to equal the fiscal year 14 under the current rules, which in this case was 386,240. But then when the next year gets here and we do the count in October and we get later in the year and they go, oh, they had a 5.8% increase, they're over the threshold. So what we're proposing is we will fund them additional money for that current year to offset that 5% increase. And I did the calculation on 6 months instead of 12, because we're already halfway through the year at this point.
Mr. Chairman, the bill is based on the ADM, not on half of the ADM, right?
The way it's written, this was raised to me as a question of whether it's the full amount or not, and that was not written specifically in. It says equal to the increase in the adjusted ADM for the current fiscal year, and there was some question as to whether the amount, and just as I did the calculations, that's the number I looked at. But we can redo the calculations at the full amount, at a quarter or a half, at whatever number we want to, and it make the bill adjust the bill. But right now, I looked at it as a half in these numbers, because remember, that's supplemental money the district's getting. Probably should have been a full number when I was doing it. That was my mistake.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the intent is to make sure that the full year is covered in the actual. I'm not sure if that language needs further clarification, but certainly the intent would be to cover the entire year. Just that the decision to make that, when that money would actually show up in the checking account of the school district, would be halfway through the year. So,
Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, I kind of need to come from it from an Anchorage perspective here, where we can have fluctuations of 500 students in a year, and that's still a ways away from 5%. You know, 500 students at 5680 is 2.8 million. I'm trying to figure out there. It seems like to me there will be times where, depending on the fluctuation, and it's very regular each year, we'll have 500. We've had 900. It just varies. And it goes up and down. That's a lot of money. And there could be times where we'll benefit from it, but then there could be another year where we're hurting from it, but it's not going to hit the 5%. I mean, talk to me from Anchorage perspective. This is millions of dollars we're talking about that are going to affect my city here.
Representative Pruitt, through the chair. And certainly that is one of the concerns as we've addressed this with the larger districts. We've been more engaged with Fairbanks than we have it with Anchorage at this stage, although Anchorage had the information for this bill months ago in terms of what's the impact, and we haven't been able to get any specific numbers. So we're hoping, as I said earlier, that dialogue will mature and we'll actually be able to look at the problems that it brings to the larger districts, if it is a problem. If you start taking, And we can certainly gather all the numbers together. If you use Anchorage as an example and look at their total amount of budget, the 10% reserve that they can maintain, and look at the, for example, if they have an increase of 4% or 3% in students, it's only a small portion of their reserve. So they have the money on hand to spend for that current year to recover in the future year. But that may not be an acceptable solution. So that's what, maybe we need a different factor, and that's one of the things we've discussed, is as the size of the district increases, the threshold decreases.
Chair, trying to understand the reserve. If they have a year where they benefit because of the way the fluctuation's made, I don't see them reserving anything. they will use it all. And it's not mismanagement. It is they will find the need and they'll apply it. Obviously, each year they're coming to us and saying that they're having a decrease. I get what you're saying, and if they were to set that aside, then I guess that would kind of keep them through that period of time. But I think that's just a presumption that we're making that I'm not confident in, because it's just not how it's gonna go when they've got people right there in their face saying, hey, wait a minute, you're gonna cut my program, and so they're gonna find themselves in some really tricky times at times. So. That's just a statement. Go ahead, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Representative Pluggy, then Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
500 is 5%.
To address Representative Pruitt's point, fiscal discipline and fortitude. Again, it's not necessarily the school districts, for the most part, seem to want to maintain the reserve. In a lot of cases, what just our limited research, it's the municipalities that want that money back for something else. And I guess there's a couple of ways we can address this. We can monkey with the percentage, you know, instead of 5%, make it, you know, 3%, 2%, which over the scope of the entire state just means more recalculations for the Department of Education instead of just one number, and you know, we're kind of done with it. The other thing we could do is we could tie the percentage to the size of the school district, realizing that the dollar amounts with a larger school district for each percentage point change more dramatically. Or we could simply mandate to the municipalities that once money has been committed to education, they can't take it back unless it exceeds the 10% reserve allowance that is in the in current statute. In other words, instead of saying you may retain up to 10%, you shall retain. I mean, we could direct that to the municipalities. Obviously, that would be taking the big thumb of the state and putting it on their heads, and maybe that's not something we want to do, but it still does boil down to what the local municipalities and the local school districts choose to do with their funding that we have graciously passed on to them.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what I'm seeing is welcome to the politics of size. Because what I have found in my 66 visits around to all these different communities, some much more Western, larger, and some, in fact, I've probably been to the larger communities because they're easier to get to than the smaller ones. But I always go in with the question, I know this doesn't sound like education, but I think it does apply to this. I go in and always ask, what part does health play in your community? And if I go into a big community, if I go into the mayor or the manager of the municipality, they kind of scratch their heads and wonder what in the world I'm talking about. They just haven't got it figured out. If you go into a very small little community and you ask that of the person who is the top person in terms of understanding the money part of their community, they give you a dissertation. They don't have to stop and think about it. They can tell you exactly what part it plays, exactly which jobs there are that bring money into the community. They know exactly the details. And I think that's playing out right here. It will play out here. And it's going to be interesting to see how this bill does, because what you're talking about in this legislation, to me it seems like, is the students that leave a community after the count, and how in the world you're going to keep going, or no, yeah, the student who come after the count is what really burdens the community, right? It's because all of a sudden you've got special needs and you didn't get the funding for the special needs. So you all of a sudden have to bring staff on that you didn't have before. And if you're a bigger school, that's not going to be that big a problem. It means the size of class changes, but not the survival of real basic programs a lot of times if you're smaller communities. And so this is going to be one where our municipalities that are larger are going to need to look a little further than just themselves. I think it is going to be a really interesting thing to watch this, and I think that's part of the discussion. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I really appreciate these numbers. It was a great conversation to have, but I think the basic premise is security in how many students you had last year, is that more important than having the dollars to educate the students you have this year? Because this says that whether you go up or down the number of students, you don't change your funding from what it was last year. So you're educating this year. If you've got fewer students, gee, your class size can go down. I mean, class size is a huge thing in many districts. I mean, I know Anchorage and Kenai are looking at the class size as being something they try and finely tune as well as they can. And this says that, oh, you're going to get maybe 560 in Fairbanks. I think it's 560 extra students, and there's going to be no money for them. But you'll adjust those within your district. Or in my district, it's 300 and some. And the question is going to be, I think, for the districts is budget security on how many kids you had last year more important than getting the actual money paid to you to educate the number of students you have this year? So I just wanted to lay that, because I think that that's the philosophical difference, and I think we're going to have to hear from a lot of school districts on that. But one thing that I didn't see in here is, what about the intensive needs students? So let's say you had an intensive needs student last year in a small district at 13 times the BSA, and this year you don't have that intensive needs student, or this year you have an intensive needs student and last year you didn't have one, so it's not just one BSA, the funding is actually 13 times. And I'm not sure how this bill contemplates those cost factors.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the first to your first question statement, I believe you're absolutely correct. That is what the philosophical is: budgeting for next year, and can we do that effectively without having a negative impact on the delivery of education next year because of a change in student count? And for districts like yours, the Anchorage District, the Mat-Su District, and there are a couple other in the state where the recent historical trend has been an increase in students. This is a concern. This is what we want to try and develop a solution for those districts, because those are the districts hardest hit in terms of management, because they don't lose any money. They get the same money. They just don't get it at the same time. You know, it's the difference between a savings account that pays quarterly versus a savings account that pays monthly. You end up with the same amount of money, you just get it at a different amount of time, or a CD or something like that. It's all earning the same amount of money if the rate is the same. It's just when you actually receive the funds is different. So that is where we've got to work through with those districts for a solution that works for them, and that's what we're trying to do. Under the question of intensive needs students, that has also come up in discussion very recently, and I believe we've got a solution to that, and I'm trying to work with the department a little bit to see if that's something we can actually implement. So
anything else? Okay, we will keep public testimony open, and Thank you for presentation.
Mr. Chair, if you could just give me just one or two more minutes with the numbers that I think would be useful, okay? Because we finished kind of in looking at the middle of the second chart here on this page, where we dealt with an increase of greater than 5%, okay? And the important part to look at is because of the supplemental funding that's in place during that 1 year, okay, if you look at fiscal year 12 through 17, the district received $2.37 million. And during fiscal year 13 through 18, they received $2.385. So based upon the same numbers of students, they actually got more money, and that's where the fiscal note from the department comes from, is those extra, that supplemental hold harmless funding is what will cost the state just a little bit more money in this process. But even if you look at theirs, it's 0.1% of the funding that we're giving to the schools.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Following this example, if we cut down the percentage from 5% down to 3% or 2%, let's say, in that, then every one of those except FY16 would be an increase. Is that correct? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if we do the, you know, you're talking about potentially adjusting those. So if we would cut them down to 3%, let's say, then all except FY16 and 17 in that middle chart would all receive an increase in every one of those years. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, in answer to your question, yes. And that was where, in response to this scenario with the larger districts, where the idea of creating a sliding scale has come into the conversation. Because for a district of 100 students, 5% is only 5, which is could only be one family. But if you lower it to 2%, it's only 2 students. So, you know, how often do you want this clause to kick in? And we don't want it kicking in every time, you know, a brother and sister come back to the community because the family moved back into the community. So maybe the sliding scale works to address your concern there, as well as the concern of the larger or the increasing enrollment districts. Right, and then the last one, which is worth looking at because it kind of puts the two together, which is probably a more typical scenario. But in this particular case, if you remember back when we looked at increases and decreases, but here we have an increase and decrease within the same six-year period, both of which kicked in the hold harmless clauses. Okay. And the point was to look at when you reach out to the end. For fiscal year 12 through 17, they got $2.34 million, and 13 through 18, based upon the same students, they got $2.35 million. So they actually, because of the hold harmless in that increase year, they actually got a little bit more money. Okay.
Follow up.
If this would pass through, is there any reason for maintaining the current hold harmless?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, my first thought was no. And as I looked back on what I believe was the philosophy behind the hold harmless, and that was when a district fell a large number, and it particularly in a small community, if that resulted in getting rid of a couple of teachers, they could spread that out. If you look at a community of, you know, 1,000 people maybe, or 500 people. And again, when you start looking at some of the really small communities, I can't relate to how many people are in the community and how many students are in the schools. But if there are 500 people in the community, 400 in the community, and there's 50 people in the school, and you have a drop and you say, we have to get rid of a teacher, obviously, we're adding a year into that based upon the way we're doing the calculations, but then by gradually sloping it off, we're allowing them to wait a year to get rid of that teacher so we don't have a huge economic impact on the community. The school's often the largest employer in the community, and so there's some social responsibility there to the community, to not be bouncing around and how many staff members you have. So the first, it was very easy at the beginning to go, we don't need that anymore, but then when I sat back and looked at why it's there, I still think it's a good clause to have in place.
Representative Feige, then Representative Seaton.
And I think to address Representative Seaton's point, the other thing that a lot of these school districts are tied into are multi-year contracts with the teachers. And I'm not sure what the limitations on hiring and firing in those contracts, but it does give them more time and just kind of buffers the transition in the way the law is currently set up with a declining balance, essentially.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, but I'm just trying to figure out the current hold harmless means the first year you get 75%, and this is saying that wouldn't be in effect at all. You'd get 100%. Because you get 100% of your student count from last year, so even though you had a significant drop, there isn't any 75% reduction. You get 100% of last year's funding, as I'm understanding it. But
Representative Seaton, through the chair, you are correct, but you have to remember, under the current formula, they're actually receiving the we're 1 year behind. Under the proposed formula, so they still need to be paid for that year the student was actually counted.
Follow up.
Okay, maybe I'm confused, and we can figure it out. But I think that if you've got a student count, and then if it drops 5%, you get paid for last year at the full student count. Right.
Correct.
Right, times 75%.
Under the current formula, I'm pretty sure I'm correct on how this is calculated under the current formula, and the department can explain it in great detail. But when the count is done, the 75% applies to the difference between the 2 years. It's not 70. It's the difference. 75% of the difference.
Right, and. Just, Mr. Chairman, so that's on page 7. For the first fiscal year after the base is determined under the subparagraph, in other words, the 5% drop, then it's calculated the district's ADM adjusted for school side plus 75% of the difference.
Right.
So that wouldn't happen, as I understand it, because this is a year in which you've dropped over 5%, so you're going to get the full funding anyway for last year. Not 75% of the difference, or maybe by the next time we can have a chart to. I just want to raise the question.
I will do that.
Worry about that. Thank you.
I believe what it does is, you'll get. You will start with a number. Say you planned on 100 students. So the next school year starts. Your funding is based on 100 students, but during. You know, that the October count of that current year, you go down to 80 students. So that's essentially one less teacher. Well, under our method, you're not penalized for that, so you don't have to fire the teacher, which you've already agreed to hire, and you have time to plan on what it is you want to do for the next year. The next year, this is where the hold harmless would apply. Your funding would be knocked off by 75%, and then so forth down the line. I think we graph it out.
A graph would be helpful for me.
But it does reduce turmoil in the current year, because now all of a sudden the district is not faced with, under the current system, they would see a shortfall in monies subject to the hold harmless. Under our system, they would see a subsequent shortfall, but in the current year, you wouldn't see a shortfall.
Good question. I wasn't thinking on that level. Anything else, sir?
No, I do appreciate the time to present this. I do kind of consider it a preliminary presentation, because I think it's a lot of complicated numbers, and I realize this isn't the budget committee, and I look forward to sitting in front of finance and and seeing if I can survive that. But we do want to work it out. The idea was grown out of the district. We looked at it and said this could be a tool that helps our districts across the state, and so our goal at this point is to find out how do we help all the districts. So there's certainly no desire to create something, and I use Anchorage as an example, being the largest district in the state. We don't want to hurt Anchorage in the process of helping Delta Junction or any other district. So
thank you. I mean, the intent is good. We just want to make sure it's a win-win. Okay. Monday, February 28, 8 a.m. sharp, we will hear from Duncan Ware. I think we already heard from him, didn't we? Superintendent of Delta Greeley School District. And HB 242, Public School Funding, Digital Learning, by Representative Peggy Wilson. And SBH, Student Questionnaires and Surveys, coming over to us from the other side of the building. With no further business before us, we are adjourned.